Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. This hour, we'll learn how news editors have been covering the coronavirus crisis, and we are also going to talk about the U.S. Census. Joining me are our panel of three Maine editorial page editors, Susan Young with the Bangor Daily News, Ben Bragdon with the Kennebec Journal and Morning Sentinel, and Greg Kesich with the Portland Press Herald and Maine Sunday Telegram. As always, we want to hear from you. During this past month, the coronavirus crisis has taken over daily life in Maine, as well as the rest of the world. What are the issues that matter most to you during this statewide emergency? You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. And I thank you all for joining us. But before we turn to our editorial page editors, we're going to turn to Maine's Secretary of State, Matthew Dunlap. Matt, today is April 1st, Census Day. What does Census Day mean?
Well, it means a lot of work for a lot of folks. This is a tremendous opportunity, despite what we're going through right now as a society with the COVID-19 pandemic. You know, we still have things to do. We still have government's still functioning. Our lives are still going on. And this is an incredibly important part of planning our future. And we still have a very bright future. And I know that our minds are very much with people who have been stricken with the virus and those who've lost loved ones. But we still have a lot to do. And what's been going on, obviously, the census is now available for folks. Some mail invitations have already gone out. Given what we're up against right now with the coronavirus, the best way to respond to the census or participate in it really is online. And, you know, the use of technology is something that we have embraced a great deal. And this is probably the best time to do it. So for people who want to know how to participate, I would urge them to go online and just type in 2020census.gov. And you can get through it. We did our kickoff about a month ago, about 2 weeks ago, rather. It seems like a month. And we went online. The commissioner of the Department of Administration and Finance and I got online, and we did our respective census input. Now, my daughter's in college, and she really needs to respond based on the fact that she's in college. And I couldn't really list her as a resident of my house because she's going to spend most of the year, we anticipate, at the University of Maine. So I called her up and said, you ought to get on, you know, do your part of the census. And without any further prompting, she was able to go online. She did it. It was very easy. It took her less than 5 minutes. So the challenge we have is that for folks who have limited connectivity or were not able to reach through these services, we're a little bit delayed in getting the counters out because of the social distancing and the stay-at-home order. So to get them out there into those neighborhoods where it's difficult to reach people either by mail or online and count them individually. So if they can get online, this will go a long way towards completing the census for 2020.
And Matt, so this is interesting because we all receive something in the mail, but let's say we've lost that. Maybe we're worried that someone else in the family stuck that into the recycling. Doesn't matter. We can still go to 2020census.gov and fill out our census form.
That's absolutely right. You don't need the piece of mail. Even if it does have a code on it that is specific to your address, you don't need it. You can just get in online. Because when I did mine online, you know, I didn't have my piece of mail with my special code on it. I just did it online. I was able to enter our information accurately and quickly and easily.
Matt, are you concerned that the coronavirus pandemic and the way this has upended our lives is going to affect the results, that the census will not be as accurate as it needs to be?
Well, we always strive for 100% accuracy, but that is a concern that, you know, we're not going to be able to reach everybody. So that just what that really focuses us on is redoubling the effort to get the word out to the public. And when we can get people out on the streets to reach those that have not responded online or by the paper survey, to redouble those efforts to make sure that we do have an accurate count of everyone in every household, especially children, especially older folks, who tend to represent some undercounted segments of our demographics.
Matt Dunlap, I know you relish being at the center of things, but right now, holy cow, the census and Bureau of Motor Vehicles and Elections all under your supervision. What is it like as your office? Is there a lot of confusion among people who need to know, if they need to register their car, if their driver's license is expanded, et cetera, et cetera? What is your staff dealing with?
A lot of phone calls right now. Our offices of motor vehicles are closed right now, which does throw things into a little bit of uncertainty for folks. With the work of the governor, we were able to extend the expiration dates of driver's licenses and registrations, understanding that that's going to make a lot of work for us in the back end when people do have to come in and fill out those registration forms. What our work is focused on right now is answering those questions and some other questions, about people who are trying to move a new vehicle or they're trying to expedite getting a new title or a duplicate title. Motor vehicles is very busy that way anyway. And so our work has really been focused on answering the questions. And to your point, my only piece of advice, so this is my last year in office, my only piece of advice for whoever succeeds me is really don't go looking for trouble because it has a way of finding you without any additional help.
I'm going to open this up to the other journalists who are on the line with us, but I have one more question. I know that in the news has been that there's a challenge to the anti-corridor group and the ballot referendum. Has your office found enough wrong with the signatures to put the ballot question in question?
Well, I'm really resisting the urge to launch probably one of the greatest April Fool's pranks of Maine history right now. So we are finishing up that work under court order. It's been remanded to us to examine the certification and look at those elements that were brought into question. We have done most of that work. We are reviewing reviewing the entirety of it. I have not seen the final product. I anticipate doing that in the next couple of hours, and we have to have that done before the close of business today. I will tell you, without revealing any secrets, that there are probably going to be lawyers that will earn their money in the coming days and weeks. That was going to happen either way, so it's not really much of a reveal. But I feel very good about the work that we've done in doing our due diligence and examining as closely as we can the charge that was brought to us by the court, and I think the court will have something to work with here in the coming days.
And Matt Ifib, before turning this over to our other journalists, I need to ask you, is the June 9th primary still, in your view, going to be on schedule?
We're going to have a primary. Whether or not it's on schedule, there's about five different scenarios that come into play. Whether or not it's on schedule depends on how those elements come together. We're working with the governor and looking at what our challenges are, not just ours. We have a lot of town offices that are closed right now. We have, issues around subsequent voter registration, absentee ballot requests, ballot production. There's a few things in play that there's going to be a different, depending on which direction we go in. Like I say, there's about four or five directions we can go in. And again, we hope to have that wrapped up today. In our work with the governor's office, I'm going to go over there at some point and have this discussion with the chief executive about what the primary is going to look like. What our goal here is, regardless of the date, because the primary is not described in the Constitution, which gives us a little bit more flexibility, our goal is to, as much as possible, make it available to every interested citizen who wants to participate in this process, because it's not just the primary. There's also an important bond question that will be available to all voters. So our charge is to get that done first, and then things, the details around the dates and the format, we can work backwards from there.
All right. Well, Susan Young, Ben Bragdon, and Greg Kessich, before we let Matt Dunlap go, do you have any follow-up questions?
I have one. Matt, it's Greg Kessich. Is there any talk about going to a full 100% vote-by-mail system and not having in-person voting on Election Day?
One of the discussions we're talking about is a broader absentee ballot election, and vote by mail is a particular structure. And it sounds like a distinction without a difference when you talk about absentee balloting versus vote by mail, but they're very, very different. And those jurisdictions that use vote by mail have other circumstances that inform that, like they have open primaries, they have registration deadlines. We do not have open primaries. We do not have a registration deadline. So it's very difficult to go to a straight vote by mail and make ballots available to every single voter when you have, you know, ballots for the Democrats and ballots for the Republicans and then the bond ballot for everybody. So, you know, we would probably move toward more of an absentee balloting structure, which is a system that we know very, very well. Vote by mail, the Postal Service has a very rigorous process they put people through. They make available for people. The people don't have to go through it. Let me clarify that. But they'll have like drop boxes available that the ballot is considered cast if it's put in the drop box by a certain time. We don't have any of that infrastructure. So we are looking at some hybrid of that where we allow more expansive use of the absentee ballot, perhaps all absentee ballot. That's one of the scenarios we're discussing. And that's going to be up for us with the governor to help inform her decision.
Susan, and so with or that, Ben, that any case, questions?
You would have you would have to request an absentee ballot, right, in order to get that to do it that way.
We may absolve people of asking for an absentee ballot, depending on what we come up with.
Okay, you mean you could just send them out?
Perhaps.
Okay.
If they're already registered, so you know, a couple of things we have to think about there for people who aren't registered but are eligible, getting them those ballots again with town offices being closed. You know, there's nothing simple here. So we have to think about every contingency as we go forward.
Thank you.
Susan or Ben?
Hey, Matt. Yeah, Matt, this is Ben Bragdon. How you doing? You mentioned it's the governor's decision. Is it solely the governor's decision how the election works, or is there legislative action necessary?
The legislature has delegated to the governor the authority to make these decisions. So it is the governor's decision. It's our job to give the governor all the information that she requires in order to make an informed decision. I've known the governor for quite a few years. She does not make these decisions lightly or capriciously. She's actually kind of driven us crazy with all the details that she's been asking for. Our job is to get her the answers to those detailed questions.
Susan, do you have any questions for Matt Dunlap?
Matt, going back to the census question, is there concern about reaching the groups that oddly are the most in need of an accurate census count, people that rely on Head Start, food programs? Those people are often the hardest to count, probably less likely to have internet connectivity. I know you're limited in what you can do right now, but longer term, are there particular thoughts about reaching out to those groups to make sure that they're counted?
That's absolutely always been the prime focus, are those undercounted demographics, people who, you know, for want of a better phrase, sometimes live on the margins. You know, they tend to move around a lot, you know, and this is a real phenomenon. I had a legislator come to me questioning the accuracy of the voter file. They brought me a grocery bag filled with return mail that they had used a voter file legally to do a constituent mailing, and 75% of the mail came back. So it must be something wrong with the file. Well, we did some research and found out the accuracy of the addresses was almost 100%. The difference was people move a lot. You know, people in your district tend to stay in an apartment for 3 months and then they move somewhere else, depending on who they're staying with. And this is a major concern, and it always has been. And that's where oftentimes the in-person counters really come into play. And right now that's delayed because of the coronavirus. And that's going to be an area of tremendous focus. So the folks that, you know, who require a lot of the services where the revenues are allocated by the census, you know, whether you're talking about Head Start, even transportation, you know, like in Bangor, you know, your readership area, federal funding for the community connector, the bus system, is dependent somewhat on census figures. Redistricting on the allocation of all these legislative districts depends entirely on accurate census figures. And that includes everybody. And people who require public services like Head Start and other services are part of the everybody. And so we want to make sure that we get them counted, and our focus going forward will be on those folks.
Well, Matt, we hadn't planned for this, but we have a call coming in for you. Tom in Monroe, what's your question for Matt Dunlap?
Yes, hi, Matt. I was curious what with the whole coronavirus and registries being shut down right now, if the federal government has any plans to move the real ID deadline.
They're way ahead of you, Tom. The president actually has extended the deadline for compliance with real ID for those federal purposes. we've been issuing real ID compliant credentials since this past July 1st. But if you don't have a passport and you need to access, say, the National Fire Academy, if you happen to be the fire chief down in Monroe, for training, that you need either a passport or a real ID by October 1st of 2020. The president has extended that deadline to October 1st of 2021. So we're in good shape there.
All right. Well, Tom, thanks for calling in. And Secretary of State Matt Dunlap, thanks so much for joining us. I know you've got a lot on your plate, especially this afternoon. Appreciate you having some time to answer these questions for us today on Maine Calling.
Anytime. I'm sure we can make three more shows out of these questions. I'll be happy to come back whenever you need me.
I'm sure we could. Thanks so much, Matt. And when we come back, we will talk with our editorial page editors for our monthly Month in Review program, a little bit different today. Call us, text us, send an email, or make a Facebook post with your thoughts about this month so far, this past month.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Androscoggin Home Healthcare and Hospice, providing compassionate home health, hospice, and care management for health for life, androscoggin.org. And Savvy Event Rental with Tidewater Sailcloth Tents, handcrafted farm tables, walnut crossback chairs, and more. SavvyEventRental.com.
COVID-19 has changed daily life in the U.S., and with news breaking by the hour, it can be hard to stay up to date. I'm Ari Shapiro. Join us every weekday for a new live conversation about the disease, what you need to know, what's coming next, and we'll answer your questions. The National Conversation with All Things Considered, live every weekday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 Pacific, from NPR News.
And that's this evening at 9 here on Maine Public Radio. With coronavirus physical distancing practices now in place all around our state, you may find that you have young ones around the house more than usual. Might we suggest a couple of valued educational resources that will make their time worthwhile? Maine Public's PBS Kids 24/7 is a free over-the-air television channel that is a wonderful learning environment with trusted educational non-commercial programming for those younger folks. PBS Learning Media is a free online educational K-12 learning resource with material and lessons for children and young adults of all ages. You'll find PBS Learning Media at mainepublic.org. Please click on the education dropdown. Enjoy.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we have our panel of newspaper editors to talk about the top issues facing Maine. We always do a month in review program, or usually do a month in review program. Obviously, this one's going to be quite a bit different. My guests, Ben Bragdon with the Kennebec Journal and Morning Sentinel, Greg Kesich with the Portland Press Herald and Maine Sunday Telegram, and Susan Young with the Bangor Daily News. You can join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. Ben Bragdon, I'm going to start with you because I understand that you had a tweet today about that we would be talking about some other things than the coronavirus.
Yeah, just a little joke. It seems like every single other news story has just disappeared and that no one's talking. I don't know if I've read a news story on anything else since, March, the first week in March.
Well, you know, let's talk about that because this has been so strange in so many ways. Obviously, historic, important. So many people are scared right now. So many people are sick. People are being laid off from their jobs. Unemployment rate, you know, rates are just skyrocketing. This is when a fine newsroom really kicks into gear. Reporters work really hard. Journalists, editors, videographers, photographers work really hard because of their dedication to their craft. But Susan Young, it's been kind of weird because we're being told, don't really go out there. Protect yourself. Don't get too close to people.
Yeah, it certainly changed how we do journalism. A lot of folks, you know, working remotely. Until recently, people still going in person to the press briefings that Dr. Shaw has been holding with the Maine CDC and Governor Mills often attending those briefings as well. But even those have gone remote.
So people are still working really hard. It's just we're not talking to people face-to-face really hard for photographers to go out and capture the news when they can't be there. A phrase I don't really like, but it's really come to be true. I mean, we're drinking from a fire hose right now. The information just seems to come so fast. And it's really hard. You want to report everything, but you've got to make decisions about what's really important, what's valuable to our readers to protect themselves, to manage their daily life when they can't leave their house. So you're really prioritizing news that's of value, but it is really overwhelming because there's so much of it every day.
You know, and Greg Kessich, we put a picture on our Facebook page, thanks to Press Herald photographer Greg Rack, amazing picture of the Press Herald newsroom empty. You know, yeah. The way journalism works, so many times we're getting together in groups of people, we're brainstorming, we're talking about how do we cover this, what's the best way to approach this story. There are no powwows, there are no group huddles right now, are there?
You know, people are doing things with video conferencing and, conference calls and trying to take the place of those meetings. But yeah, you don't hear the audio. Usually when you're in the newsroom, you know what everybody's working on. You hear the murmurs and the one half of the interviews, and you have a sense of what's going to be in tomorrow's paper. And now I pick up the paper in the morning, and it's all news to me. You know, I think a good point that was just made was that the photographers are not phoning. You know, working from home and phoning. They're out there taking pictures. There's no other way they can do their job. And I'm coming from a newspaper. The newsroom might be empty, but the press room is certainly operating, full force. The mailroom where they assemble the papers, circulation, all those people are continuing to work and to get the news out during this crisis.
Greg, I know that your paper is among many around the country that have dropped their paywall, that people are able to read the papers for free. You're not really quite the right person to ask. You're not the money person, but this has got to be a serious decision for newspapers who are already financially on a lifeline in many cases.
Yeah, no, it is an important decision, and it just speaks to what the project that we're working on, which is informing the public. It's not like every other kind of business. There's a certain element of we're producing a public good. It's tough. Things were tough before this happened, and they're even tougher now. A lot of retail stores are shut down. They're not advertising. That was a major source of revenue for us. So we're hearing from readers who are really happy that we're continuing to produce news and they're supporting us. So it's really great to hear.
Ben, talk to
Greg,
me about
I don't know
how,
if it's,
yeah, go ahead, Susan.
Yes, Susan.
I don't know if it's the same at the Press Herald, but even though all the coronavirus information, yours and at the Bangor Daily News as well, is not behind a paywall, so people can read it for free. But we're seeing significant growth in online subscriptions, which is really gratifying. People understanding that there is a cost to produce all the news, even though they're able to read it for free, they understand that, paying for journalism is important, that we have bills to pay. Advertising revenue obviously has fallen because people can't go out and eat at restaurants, go buy a car, things that bring in revenue to newspapers. So we've really been hit hard on that side. So, it's hopeful and gratifying that people see the value and are willing to pay, even when our most important news is available for free.
Ben Bragdon,
how is
your paper pacing itself? This is only a few weeks in.
Yeah, it's certainly day to day. It's really, I think everybody is taking it day to day. You can't forget, along with everybody else that is going to work during this. There are people are also dealing with the pressures of this whole shutdown at home, at their own homes, and And so that's certainly a concern that you know, this is a unprecedented thing. We're a couple weeks into it, even though it feels like we're, 6 months into it, and we don't know when it's going to end. But, you know, it's been an amazing thing to watch. We've been working remotely now for about 2.5 weeks, and it was an amazing thing just to watch this huge operation just turn on a dime and become a remote operation overnight. I mean, we can't shut down for a few days and figure out how we're going to do it. We just have to keep putting a paper out. And on top of the editors and the reporters and the photographers, we have just an amazing production staff that puts the paper together every night and has to coordinate it across multiple papers with multiple deadlines, with stories coming and leaving and new things breaking all the time. And it's hard enough to do when they're all in the same room or in a couple of rooms talking to each other. Now when they're kind of dispersed all over central and southern Maine, it makes it even more difficult. And they're just killing it every night to have the paper out and have the website looking good and having it the most up-to-date news. And, Greg and Susan and I we're kind of in our own department and a little bit of our own world. And we're able to kind of watch this happen both behind the scenes and then out in public, and it's been a great thing to watch. I hope this brings an appreciation for what the local news does in Maine, and that's TV and news and radio that have done during this, because we're entering a tough time for this business, and we're going to need everybody's help to make it through it.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you mentioned television, Ben, because I've been watching the television stations with so many of the anchors and reporters doing their best to report remotely as well. I'm sitting in my family room right now, and just today, I don't know if I sound any different to you, but I have, with the help of our amazing engineers, the email guidance, installed even better equipment than I did 2 weeks ago. My learning curve is so, so steep right now, using programs and equipment that I've never used before. Greg, I'm wondering if we're going to go back. I mean, obviously, I'll go back to a studio someday, but so many things have changed in the workplace. How many of these are going to stick?
I think about this all the time. We know from going through previous disasters, and certainly nothing like this, but on a localized basis, some things change. Some things just change for a little while, and some things change forever. And you never really know which or which until it happens. But like little things like, are people going to find that they're more productive working from home? Are employers going to find that they can rent less office space and still get, quality work by dispersing their workforce, and what kind of impact is that going to have on businesses like, commercial real estate? What's going to happen in terms of, city planning? I've heard that the city of Portland's parking revenue has just collapsed, gone to like practically zero because, everything's closed. But what happens if, some big portion of all the people who worked in those shiny buildings downtown are now going to be working from home? Will that revenue return? Will we need so many parking garages? There's like all these ancillary things that we won't know until after it's over. But will we go back to shaking hands? I think about this all the time. It used to be the most natural thing in the world. You did it without thinking about it, and then once you think about it, you're like, that's kind of weird.
Right.
Handshaking.
Well, shaking hands of strangers, but hugging friends. Susan.
Yeah. Go back to hugging hands? I mean, will we go back to washing our hands like the way we used to, the way I used to, which is not the way I'm doing it now,
I hope not. We don't want to know anymore, but I hope not.
Well, Susan Young, I'm thinking about at the beginning of this past month, we're doing the month in review. We were talking about a presidential race. We weren't talking about a pandemic. And boy, politics just seems to suddenly have, I won't say gone away, but it's certainly not the first or second or third or fourth item on the front page.
Yeah.
No, not at all. I mean, where is Joe Biden? We haven't heard anything from him or Bernie Sanders. I think they understand at this point, regardless of what kind of job you think he's doing, Donald Trump is in charge. And, you know, we don't want to cloud the message, not so much from him, but more from Dr. Fauci and Dr. Blix, or Dr. Birx. You know, the focus is on getting people information that they need to survive. I mean, it's really basic, and it has meant we've cut away almost everything else. Someone asked a few days ago, is there still a war in Yemen? And I'm ashamed to admit, I don't know. I don't know if they're still fighting or if things have gotten better there. I mean, we're also so focused on what's happening with coronavirus in Maine and in the U.S. You know, we all paid a lot of attention to Italy and China, but less so in other countries. You know, what's happening in Africa? Like Greg said, I don't know the last time I've read a news article that wasn't about coronavirus, specifically one aspect of it or another. It does feel like everything else has just fallen away.
Ben Bragdon, one thing we've talked about in previous month in review programs is the increasing distrust of institutions, of government, of the press. Do you sense a shift in that?
I don't know. I mean, we're certainly learning in real time the value of expertise and the value of clear communication and the fact that there are just some things that only government can do. The point we're at right now, I don't want to, you know, you don't want to use these things to like make a philosophical or ideological point about things, but we're certainly seeing, right, where we have why we have these things in place to handle the worst case scenario, and why when things look really good, we shouldn't cut back on our defenses to those things just because things look good and it seems like we'll never have a problem in the future. I mean, one of the big problems with this sort of outbreak we're learning all the time is that what we're seeing in front of us is kind of a reflection of what happened 2 or 3 weeks ago. And so even if you're reacting to what's in front of you, you're always behind. And the only way to overcome that is to have experts who can look at this stuff and say, no, we know where this is going. We can tell where it's going. You have to trust us. You know, you have to take the step off the cliff and know that there's going to be a step there for you. But that's really hard to convince everybody. And that's led to us being kind of always a little bit behind with the steps we've taken to stop where this is going. And I worry that we're going to get past all this stuff and look back and say, you know, at every step we just didn't do enough. And that made it a lot worse than it had to be.
Well, we'd love to hear what you and the audience are thinking about right now. What are you talking about as you are living your life through this crisis, as you're dealing with maybe the financial or emotional implications of living through this historic time? Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from St. Lawrence Arts in Portland, hosting their annual Allagash Brewing Victor Ale event on May 21st. Information at stlawrencearts.org. And Maine Community Foundation, proud to support Maine Calling, a forum for ideas and issues that matter most. MaineCF.org.
I'm Marco Werman. At The World, we're always looking beyond our borders to get the global take on the news. That's especially important as we deal with a pandemic. We take you to places where the coronavirus struck first, places that may recover from its effects before the U.S. Join us as we take on each day's news from a global perspective. That's why we call it The World.
And that's coming up this afternoon at 3 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. The Maine Center for Disease Control holds a daily weekday update and briefing on the coronavirus. You can watch it in its entirety on Maine Public Television, on our website, mainepublic.org, and on the Maine Public Facebook page. It generally starts at 11:30 each morning and will also be carried most mornings here on Maine Public Radio until noon and here and now. Again, the daily briefing on the coronavirus from the Maine CDC on Maine Public Television, mainepublic.org, the Maine Public Facebook page, and also here on Maine Public Radio. They will also be archived each day for later viewing. Please visit mainepublic.org and click on the television dropdown.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today we're talking with our panel of editorial page editors about the news of the month in Maine and how their papers are covering this crisis. Joining me, Greg Kessich with the Portland Press Herald and Maine Sunday Telegram, Susan Young with the Bangor Daily News, and Ben Bragdon with the Kennebec Journal and Morning Sentinel. You can join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. If you're quick, you can tweet at Maine Calling or post a very brief Facebook page message or email to talk@mainepublic.org. We'll go to Annie calling from Portland. Hi, Annie. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to thank all the journalists for their work, and I know that newspapers are having a hard time in the pandemic. Just wondering if there's anything we can do to help out.
If you don't already, please subscribe to your local paper. That's the biggest thing you can do. Some papers are even taking donations, trying a new model to fund what we're doing. The best way, unfortunately, to show your support is with money.
Yeah, that's the public radio model.
Yeah, we'll have to get some tote bags.
Right.
Annie, thanks for your call and thank you for your support of journalism. Graham on Facebook, as an advertising sales rep for the Lincoln County News, I want to thank all my advertisers, current or awaiting to return to business. We can't do a newspaper without subscribers, advertisers, and single copy sales. So thank you very much. You know, he mentioned single copy sales. People are not going to their coffee shop. They're not going to their corner store in the numbers that they were before just to pick up that paper. Are we seeing fewer print copies of newspapers being sold and more online reading? Is that, Greg, what you think is going to be one of these shifts?
I think that might be, you know, I think it's not an option for a lot of the weeklies, which are free, that they need people to pick them up. For the people to see the readers to see the advertising, but I don't know. You know, if what's going to happen to the coffee shops and what are people going to want to read when they're there? These are all things that, you know, there's other issues on our plate first before we figure out what the fallout is. But I think these are, you know, things that will reveal themselves in the months ahead.
All three of you are editorial page editors, so you have a different perspective than maybe a lot of people because you're hearing from your readers. Susan Young, what do your readers seem most concerned about right now? What are you getting most of the comments and letters about? And then also, what are some of the things that are surprising you that are maybe not what you would expect readers to really want to be knowing about that they are?
Over and over, our readers are really looking for the basic information. How do I get coronavirus? How do I know if I have it? How is it different from the flu or a cold? If I think I have it, what should I do? Can I get tested? Do I quarantine? How do I quarantine? How do I protect my family if we're all in the same house? People are also really interested in what they can do to help. And then there's so many heartwarming things going on across the state, you know, from blood drives to people helping distribute food to people that can't make it to a grocery store to the distillers stopping production of alcohol and making hand sanitizer. Yep. Because it's really hard to buy hand sanitizer. Companies like L.L. Bean using their trucks in their warehouse to package food for Good Shepherd and making masks for medical personnel and first responders out of the liners of dog beds. a lot of ingenuity and things are coming to the forefront, which is, you know, not to sound Pollyanna, but the typical Maine, you know, can-do spirit. So I think people are also very happy to hear the little bits of good news. I mean, it can be very overwhelming and very scary and depressing to hear about this disease that we can't see, to know that it's out there and that it can harm us and people that we care about. So I think, you know, it's really hard for people to deal with that day in and day out, and they're looking for little bits of good news. And also sounds a little bit odd for us in the news business to be saying it, but you've got to take a break from, you know, reading about coronavirus, whether it's on one of our websites, in our newspapers, or on social media. You know, go read a great book, play some music, listen to music, go for a walk 6 feet apart or more from other people. But you've got to do things to take yourself away from the worry that is what we're facing every day with this.
Funny you mentioned that, Susan. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about getting outdoors safely on Maine Calling. Turning to you, Greg, what are you hearing from readers?
I'm hearing what Susan just described, people who are, you know, kind of taking this, we're all in this together attitude. But another side of that is I'm sensing there's some anger at people who are not, you know, who are cheating, people who are like not doing their part. We've had a number of letters about hoarding in the of toilet paper and other things in the grocery stores, hand sanitizer. There is a certain amount of anger among readers about people who are leaving areas that have high coronavirus infection and going out to rural Maine where they think they'll be safer, and potentially bringing the virus with them. Or if they did get sick, would overwhelm our already very rudimentary healthcare system. So I sort of sense that there's a people are happy to think that we're all in this together, but there are definitely people who are concerned that that others are trying to get over.
And what about you, Ben?
I would say yes to both of those. I think people are looking for the most accurate information. You know, this is something, you know, no one had ever heard of a few months ago. And so all those little questions, can I exercise? Where can I go? When can I go? Those sort of things are so important. I think the thing that we've been doing that we've really tried to be helpful for is giving a voice to healthcare providers who have written op-eds and letters from all over the state. We had, 4 or 5 dozen healthcare providers in Central Maine last week joined together to send in a letter that was just a short letter that just said, you know, stay home for our sake. And I think that helped really, you know, you can hear it from the CDC and you can hear it from the governor and other elected officials. But to hear it from the people that are you know, putting on a mask, if they can find one, and going into the emergency room and going in to deal with patients, that people that are your neighbors that you otherwise wouldn't see in the paper because they work pretty anonymously most of the time, you know, taking the time to come together and send that message out over and over again, I think is really powerful. And I think it helps when you're asking people to take these really drastic measures based on, you know, what at the time was pretty few cases is really important to hear from those people.
Susan, your paper covers those counties that were the last to experience confirmed cases and still counties that have not had a confirmed case. Are you still hearing from doubters, skeptics, people who think that all of this is a little bit of overkill?
I mean, they're becoming fewer and fewer, and the doubt has changed. People aren't so much suggesting it's a hoax anymore, but there are still some folks that think the severity of the problem is overblown. But that number seems to be shrinking almost daily. I think even people where there aren't large number of cases understand that, you know, it's coming, or it very likely can come. if we don't take the stringent measures that the governor and several cities have implemented. So I think there's a growing understanding. I mean, maybe they don't feel comfortable speaking out, but there's a few that are regulars on our pages that are still saying those things. But I think by and large, people understand it. And as Greg said, you know, especially in places where there are a lot of seasonal residents, there is concern that folks are going to come from New York or other places with a large number of cases and either bring it here or, you know, even if just they themselves are sick, as Greg said, then overwhelm small rural hospitals. So there's a little bit of anxiety about, you know, these people that often are well known in communities because they're here every year. But, you know, why now? Why can't you just stay put in Florida or New York or wherever you are and come later? So that's a sentiment that is fairly widespread in those types of communities.
Greg, do you have a sense of how people in Maine are reacting to the steps that Governor Mills has been taking over the past couple weeks, the orders that she has been unfolding, maybe a little more slowly than more populous states?
You know, it's hard to judge what the compliance is. I think Nirav Shah was asked this in the briefing today, and he said, well, we have data about the number of, you know, cars on the road, and that they have, like, fallen, you know, precipitously. So there are fewer people driving places. There's fewer places to go. Just by closing the restaurants and bars, you're reducing a lot of the coming and going around the state. So maybe even if people aren't fully all in on complying, they're kind of complying by without having a choice. Just from what I can see, and I live in Portland, the city seems completely different. There's just you walk around when I do, and there's very few people out on the street, and very few businesses open, and you know, not as many cars as I'm used to seeing. And I can only project that across the state and say that people are taking it seriously and doing the thing. I did see like 8 guys playing basketball yesterday. And I didn't say anything because I was too much of a coward. But then I saw somebody on Twitter call the same people out, you know. So, but yeah, no, it's definitely feels like people are taking advantage of, you know, or following the instructions to an extent that I wouldn't have thought possible a month ago. You know, we all talked about China, and they said, like, well, you know, they shut down these cities, and people would say, well, you could never do that here because, you know, we have the First Amendment, freedom of assembly. And no, it seems like you can do it here. You know, people are looking for guidance. I think that was what the governor's decision yesterday was all about, was that, you know, small towns didn't feel like they had the information to be able to make rulings on their own the way the bigger cities had. And the state kind of stepped in and said, we're going to do this statewide. And I think that takes a lot of pressure off them.
And really briefly, and I'll turn to you, Ben, for this, some frustration that the story that's made the national news out of Maine is the story from Vinyl Haven, where apparently some people have put a tree in somebody's driveway so that they will not leave their house. On the other hand, the town manager of Vinyl Haven reached out afterwards and said, this is not what this island is about. This is, and named all of the wonderful things community was doing. So we're really seeing a tension between this frustration among some of out-of-staters coming, but then also saying, no, this is not the majority, this is the minority.
Yeah, I mean, there's, I think, been kind of a lack of federal leadership on this. It's kind of left all the states to do their own thing and kind of pit each other against each other, because and we see it with the protective equipment and all these other things. And some states have been slower than others, and some have been faster. And as we get into this thing, we're going to see how that affects where the cases are and how long we're in this thing. And I have a feeling that the states that take the most drastic action and do well are going to you know, look at the states who didn't and wonder what they were doing and how much longer that's going to stretch out this outbreak.
Well, thank you all for being here and for all the good work you're doing right now. I really appreciate you carving out an hour of your really busy day for us, as always, but especially now. The voice you just heard, Ben Bragdon with the Kennebec Journal and Morning Sentinel. Also with us, Susan Young with the Bangor Daily News and Greg Kesich of the Portland Press Herald, all editorial page editors. On tomorrow's program, we are going to talk about climate change in the time of coronavirus. What are climate scientists observing as the coronavirus crisis continues and it affects pollution associated with manufacturing and travel? And we will talk about getting outdoors safely, places to go and activities that are still okay to pursue. An additional note, if you are a healthcare worker, we invite you to leave us a voicemail about your experiences during this crisis. That number, 207-330-4781. Again, 207-330-4781. You can also email your comments to tellmemore@mainpublic.org. Again, looking to hear from healthcare workers about how you are doing during these extraordinary times. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. We had additional help from John Bradford. Today's Maine Calling will be rebroadcast tonight at 7, and you can find all sorts of links and resources at mainecalling.org. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.